Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Hostey-Cundell, the Johnny Howson of the podcast. I'm one of our own. And I'm joined today by the Georgie Rutter loss of possession of the podcast, Martin Riley. But as this man says, don't worry, he'll make up for that soon. And finally, I'm joined by Junior Firpo Mustache of the podcast. Just like this man, it's nice to stroke and keep your upper lip warm. It's Dan Holdsworth. Dan, how are you?
I'm absolutely bloody marvellous. Leeds won a game.
We did.
Hurrah.
It's because I was going to be on the pod.
That's what it is, yeah. I think it's because I wore odd socks or something or whatever routine I'm supposed to do before a match.
Yeah, I mean...
Nothing we know, to do with the performance
and
the
tactics.
Yeah, we
know footballers are superstitious, so, you know, why can't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, Martin, how about you? How are you fed?
I am indeed. I'm doing good. I'm very happy that Leeds have won. It's been nice to have a change from the recent bad performances. And my food tonight, I had spicy chicken burgers with homemade chips, which was pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, I had. I also had something of the potato variety. Not my usual spag bol. I had spicy beef jacket potato.
Very nice.
So like a chili beef jacket potato. Yeah. What about you, Dan?
Well, I had a Chinese-style belly pork.
Oh, nice.
Baked in the oven with some like broccoli and what have you. So that was really good, actually. I really like belly pork. So fatty meat, what's not to like?
Weirdly, I'm not into belly pork. I'm not into most fat. I'm not into fat on my meat. I quite like my meat quite lean. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
I'm an athlete, so, yeah.
Me too.
And on that note, we will now discuss a group of athletes because we are actually here to discuss the 4-3 victory over Middlesbrough at the Riverside on Monday night. But we'll just touch on some news. Roberts was injured for the game, so he wasn't included. And it looks like Dan James, well, it doesn't look like. He's definitely going to miss the QPR game. Leeds haven't said anything about the Southampton game with some intercostal muscles around the ribs. How do we think that might affect us going forward if they miss both of the last two games? What do we think it might mean for us? Martin, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing that either of them are injured. We need many of our players available for these final games as we can, really, just to give us as many options as possible. Especially Dan James is a good sub to bring on to change things how we're operating. He is unique and one of the wide players who likes to stay wide. So if we do need to stretch games, he's the only winger we've got who can do that, really. I suppose you could say Jadon Sancho is, but he doesn't quite do it in a similar sort of way to Dan James. He also likes to operate in a half space a fair amount as well. But I think James is the only one who you can really stretch the pitch with. So that will definitely be a miss. And Roberts, again, that's another miss because we need fullbacks. We don't have that many of them. So if one of our other injury-prone fullbacks were to get injured, it could cause us problems. I mean, it probably would just mean that Archie Gray would go back to right-back. But yeah, either way, it's not good that we're having players injured. But other teams have got more injuries around us, so maybe it's not too bad to have just the two, including Strouk, the long-term injury. Overall, it's not a good thing, really.
Yeah, Dan, anything to add on to that?
Yeah, not really. Basically agree. I'm more concerned about Dan James of the two, I think. I think he's a really useful weapon off the bench. Chasing, you know, holding, you know, seeing games out, offering that kind of threat the other way. Quite a good presser, hard worker, all that kind of good stuff. And I had visions of him scoring the goal to get us promoted as well, so that's ruined, perhaps.
I mean, I had visions of Stuart Dallas scoring the goal to get us promoted, so, you know. My hopes were ruined before we even got relegated. Yeah, for me, I think Dan James is probably the big miss, as much as I love Connor Roberts, just because I love him as a character. Just to put that out there, I think I'd be really good friends with him, and we've both got great tashes. But yeah, I think, especially really against Southampton, I think Dan James would be very useful with the way that Southampton play and being able to exploit the space that they might leave. But enough about that, because you'll talk about it, or someone will talk about it next week in a preview. Could be me, who knows. I will now go into the game summary. So Leeds approached the game in their usual 4-2-3-1 shape, with Middleton matching us up with their own 4-2-3-1. Both teams had spell of possession throughout the first half, with Middlesbrough edging that battle. However, it was Leeds who created the higher quality chances in the first half, creating four big chances to Borough's two. The game got off to a fast start in the 7th minute, with Borough stealing the ball from Nyonto on halfway, attacking quickly through Latilat, who was dispossessed by Melier, with the ball becoming free for Isaiah Jones to open the scoring into a more or less empty net. Leeds equalised quickly. Rutter carried the ball down the left, cutting into the box and winning a penalty under a challenge from Jake Steele, which was expertly dispatched by Crescencio Somerville after a quarter of an hour. 4 minutes later, Leeds continued to build down the left, and a Firpo cross was missed by all the Borough defence for Bamford to hip it in for 2-1 on 18 minutes. Borough responded on the half-hour mark, following a Georgie Rutter loss of possession deep in Leeds' half. The ball was played to Latilat, who danced across the edge of the box before striking past Melier to level the game again. 9 minutes later, Leeds broke forward at pace through the middle, ending with Somerville playing Nonto through on goal again on our left, with the Italian finishing well to make the score 3-2. In the second half, Borough dominated possession for the majority of the half, and with neither team creating many big chances, Borough being the only side to create one big chance. Despite this, it was Leeds who scored next, quickly attacking down the left, ending with Junior Firpo playing Somerville into the box, leaving the Dutchman to score what is now his trademark placed finish across after cutting in onto his right, making the score 4-2 in the 61st minute, which was only one of two shots Leeds attempted in the second half. Borough continued to dominate possession and the game looked to be fizzling out. A long ball was hooked forward, aimed towards Latilat, who looped a header over Melier from outside the box, making the score 4-3. The final 8 minutes were frantic, in which Borough tried all they could to equalise, including allowing their goalkeeper to go up for multiple corners, the hairiest moment being a header from Clark, which was cleared by Firpo, but the game ended 4-3. Breathe. Okay, so we'll move on swiftly to the interrogation. The first half was really chaotic, as we've just mentioned. How do you feel we managed out of possession when Borough had the ball, and how were we approaching them with our forward press? Martin, I'll start with you.
So, the forward press, it was a bit up and down throughout the first half, I felt. There were some good moments from it, but ultimately I think Borough were able to play through it largely. We didn't really manage to create many opportunities with the press which we had going on, and it was ultimately not very effective. It left a lot of space behind, and Borough were really good at finding men in advanced areas, dropping deep, especially their left winger, whose name escapes me at the moment. Silvera, is it? Silvera, yeah.
Silvera. So,
and Silvera was dropping deep quite often to pick up balls, so was Finazaz. I like Finazaz quite a bit, really. He was quite influential in this game, but that's neither here nor there. And I think largely Borough did a good job of keeping hold of the ball. They have a good midfield pivot who operate very well in a ball-heavy side in Housen and O'Brien. O'Brien especially, I do really like. And both the midfielders have a good way of moving into the fullback spots when the fullback's getting forward. And they do like to have both the fullbacks getting forward when they do attack. So that really did help them to escape from our press when we were pressing. But I think overall it wasn't a very effective press from us, and it did mean that Borough were able to generate quite a lot of dangerous moments. Not as many as what we did, of course, but they were still able to create quite a lot, and the press could have been a little bit better or approached in a different way. I think that certain parts of it was just a bit disjointed, and it seemed to work very well. Although there was some good work rate from both Mumford and from Routier. Both of them were getting run deep to help quite often, and part of it was good. And in regards to the other part of out of possession, that we did a good job of defending our box, I felt. So even though the forward press wasn't good, we did a largely good job, other than a few ticky moments. We did manage the box quite well, which has been a strength of ours for a while now.
Yeah, Dan, I saw you nodding along at the start there. I'm assuming you agree, or you have any?
Yeah, I kind of felt like we kind of pressed in a 4-4-2, or occasionally like a 4-5-1 that became a 4-4-2. So Bamford would press, and then it would often be different players would join to make it a 4-4-2. So more often than not, Rutter, but occasionally Archie would charge in, or Nonto or whatever, and make it a 4 and the shuffle across. I kind of noticed they were leaving Matt Clark. So if the ball went to Matt Clark, they were kind of holding off him a little bit. I guess they were thinking, well, we'll let him have the ball. But like, it didn't work. Matt Clark played quite a lot of good balls into sort of dangerous areas and was able to turn us. So that ploy kind of didn't work whatsoever. And I think second half, we just completely sat off them and just kind of condensed that middle area. So those balls into the middle area were kind of not there second half, which obviously we'll talk more in detail. So yeah, I agree with Martin. The press wasn't great. There was obviously a plan, but it wasn't a well-conceived plan. Or, you know, letting Clark have the ball is fine, but you've got to have a plan to make it really difficult for him to find players upfield, and we didn't do that.
Yeah, I think, like you said, when you let Clark have the ball, what we should be looking at then is pressing him in a certain way that's forcing him to make a pass that he's not good at doing,
where we want him to make the pass.
And yeah. I don't think we did that. I think we looked at him and went, you're not ever going to make a good pass. And obviously he was making those good passes.
Yeah,
100% agree with what you both said there. And then moving on to how we were, in a way, we created quite a lot of XG in this game in comparison to most recent others. Especially in the first half. And yeah, I think we've put here that it could possibly be the most XG in one half that we've created, with 2.24 and 0.79 obviously was from the penalty. What do we put this down to? Was this down to Middlesbrough, or was it down to us, Dan?
I think it being Middlesbrough is probably the big factor. You know, I don't think the performance levels were way, way, way higher than the Blackburn game. They were up, but you know, part of that is Borough. I mean, playing the way they played and the way they kind of evacuated midfield, and occasionally when we were able to turn the ball over, even though it wasn't a press, we were just attacking to space, weren't we? And also, you've got to realise that we got like 0.8 XG from a penalty, and Bamford's chance was 0.75. So what's that? 1.5. About 2.2 over two chances. So it wasn't like we made, you know, it was like four or five big chances. It was kind of those big mega chances, and then the Nonto chance, which was perhaps shouldn't have been given. But so, you know, it's kind of three big chances to make up that 2.2. And yeah, I think it was just a nice game for us to where we've struggled to score goals. It was just a game where Borough were very chaotic. We're looking to like flood forward, and it just meant the moments when we were able to attack, we were able to attack at pace and into space. And I think in those kind of transitional moments, players like Rutter and Somerville and Nonto had the edge physically and athletically and technically over their players. So we're able to kind of usually, you know, burst through a tackle and make something, make dangerous moments quite easily, I think, with their individual ability.
Yeah. And Martin, what do you see it as being Middlesbrough? I spoke in the game summary that we had quite a bit of fruition down the left, which we've seen us try the left quite a bit and we've maybe relied too much, but it seemed to come off. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. The left side of our attack was definitely in this game. And I think that did help because Borough were quite weak down that side. Jack Seal is not their first choice right back by any stretch of it. And you could tell he struggled in the matchup against Somerville. Most fullbacks do. But he especially did struggle. And also against Routier, when he was moving on to the left side, it was him who gave away the penalty due to Routier's fantastic carry. That was phenomenal. But yeah, we did a really good job in this half. I felt that we penetrated the space when it was there to attack with good, quick passing. And there's also some nice work from the back line as well, finding players in space, especially Ampadu. He was doing a really good job of getting the ball to players in central areas. And then I thought Archie was doing a good job of combining on the flank on that left side as well. He was quite often making good runs forward off the ball, which was causing problems for their side because they've got Firpo and they've got Archie and they've got Somerville to worry about. So it caused them problems, especially with how much space they did leave because of their own high press, which at times did cause us problems. but I think overall we did manage to do a good job at playing through it, and it could have caused a really big problem in the second half. There was one moment where Melier was dallying a little bit on the ball, but other than that, I felt their press wasn't, well, probably quite similar to ours, high, but wasn't really that connected at times. But yeah, I think overall it's probably the mismatch between our attackers and their defence which caused the amount of XG we created in the first half. But I do agree with Dan that it was inflated by the bigger chances that we had in that half, two really, really big chances, and then the one from Nonto was also 0.5 as well. So it's lots of three really big chances and a bunch of smaller ones.
Plus Bamford's, which was Bamford's 1.5.
Yeah, exactly.
0.15.
Yeah, exactly. So there's quite a few which were inflating it a lot. So, but either way, we should be happy with our performance in the first half. I felt, at least from an attacking perspective, we created enough to be clearly in the lead in that half.
So would we say if our attacking was effective, does that mean that Borough's out of possession approach and their pressing was not effective? How do we feel they did, mine?
I thought they did do a good job with some parts of it, like I mentioned in the last question. I had a good connect with the midfield and the forward press. Both Houghton and O'Brien were quite quick to step into certain challenges. And O'Brien especially was giving Rotero a rough game. So I think it probably worked out about 50-50 in the time that they were going for it. Sometimes Rotero got past him, other times O'Brien got the better of him. So that was a good matchup there. And I think it was down to those individual ones as to why we weren't able to become more effective with the press that they had. And the individuals in it were good at moments, but I think our individuals also tore it through in occasion. So it's a bit of good, bit of bad, really, for, I'd say, on Borough's press.
Yeah, Dan, have you got anything to add on to that?
Yeah. So Borough kind of pressed out of like a 4-3-3, which is, you know, the system on paper, but they were the front three were very narrow. And what I noticed they were doing, they were kind of getting between our centre backs, pushing them wide, and shielding Gruev. So they were stopping the ball getting to Gruev, that narrow front three, and they were forcing the ball onto Rodon or Ampadu, and then to play it into our full backs, who were kind of quite high and quite wide. And then they were very quick at snapping in, particularly Byram. Thomas was really good at snapping in on Byram or Nonto, which I think was part of how they won the ball for the first goal. So yeah, they were really good at kind of just forcing us, like stopping Gruev playing, really. And Archie Gray was kind of playing more, probably higher than Kamara would typically play that eight role, I think. So I think Gruev was on his own quite a lot. So like I say, I think when we got it through to Gray and through to his wide areas, we were in a great position to really attack. But quite a few occasions they were snapping in at that kind of second line. They were letting us play it through the first line, but they were letting us play it through the first line in a way they wanted us to. You know, and they were like kind of forcing like Rodon to play kind of risky balls out to Nonto and Byram, and it kind of, like I say, it kind of worked, didn't it, for their first goal, certainly. And one thing I did notice, if their first line ever got aggressive and really went after our back four, like Housen would snap straight onto Gruev straight away, or O'Brien would really snap onto Gruev. They were really like focusing on stopping the ball going through Gruev and forcing leads round. So that was the ploy, and I guess it kind of worked until it didn't. I mean, when we played round, it was like a ton of space. And it's the analogy, isn't it, of the football's a game of like a blanket, isn't it? You can put the blanket over your feet and your head's free, or you can put the blanket over your head and your feet are covered. So Borough were kind of covering certain areas, but they were so aggressive at that and they were leaving big gaps elsewhere. So when we're able to get into those gaps and break that press, you know, we profited, I guess.
Yeah, and as you say, when they did snap in, that's when it worked for them snapping in. Again, they did it quite high up when they snapped in on Rutera a couple of times. So obviously, the second goal came from them snapping in quite well on him, high and wide within our own half. Same goes for Nyonto's first goal. It had happened to Rutera a little bit earlier on in the half before the goal happened as well. So, it was obviously effective when it worked, but then it was really not effective when it didn't. It was that real high risk, high reward for them, was how I saw it. And kind of a follow-up for that, as you just mentioned there, with regards to what they did with splitting our centre-backs, we had a question on Twitter from Craig, who wanted to know what our thoughts are on the build-up between, this part isn't in there, but obviously we've got this coined as the triangle of sadness, of Melier, Rodon and Ampadu. And he says, I'll be honest, Melier scares the S-word out of me. I'm not going to swear. And I'm amazed we've not been caught out more. So what kind of do you think about that, Dan, on the axis of sadness, the triangle of sadness?
I'm fine with it. I mean, I think we need better routes out of that triangle, but I get it. I get why they do it, and I get why they play that way. And it doesn't worry me that much. I mean, the gadgets at the ground really like freak out about it that I sit with, and it's just like, I just want them to like F off, like shut up, man. It's just, you know, we're trying to draw people out. It's obvious what we're trying to do. Like Meliès did good at it. Like Rodon and Ampadu are pretty solid, so I'm fine. I think the only the big way it breaks down, I don't think Rodon and Byram have that great a relationship building up on the right hand side. And you know, like Byram was a few times yesterday, I felt Byram could have inverted a bit to receive and we could have been out, and it was a bit stuck to the touchline. So I kind of feel like it's a bit one trick with Rodon, isn't it? So I guess teams can work him out. But broadly speaking, we got out yesterday, didn't we, and played through them quite like enough to generate a lot of XG and a lot of chances. So I wasn't particularly concerned with it yesterday. I was concerned with the errors going the other way, you know what I mean? But it's not so much the build-up issues. I mean, there's only that one time, wasn't there, when Meliès got caught in the second half?
Yeah,
on the ball.
Any three of them got caught within that build-up sort of part. Yeah, that was the only time. Yeah,
and building up down the left was great. We're going to get two good players, but Firpo had a great game, and part of that was some of the good build-up play, you know, on that left side. So, maybe I'm less anxious than Craig, but I didn't see it as an issue yesterday, really.
Yeah, Martin, are you as anxious as Craig?
No, I don't think so. I think largely I agree with what Dan was saying there. I especially agree on the part about Byram not giving any support at times. He seemed to stick probably a bit higher than what I would prefer him to be. So it left getting the ball to him would have meant a pretty difficult long ball to be played by Meliès, who we know isn't the best at those sort of chipped passes out to the fullback. So it doesn't really make much sense for him to be in those sort of positions when the centre-backs are both being covered by the attacking three of Borough. It would make more sense for him to just sort of offer that extra body in central space, which we can get to a little bit easier, and pull their attackers around a bit more and just get a bit more movement in general areas. There were times where Borough was dipping a bit deeper to help out, but I also feel that he could move around a little bit more. He was tending to stick to more central spaces, and if he just was moving just a little bit more laterally from one side to the other, I think he would probably be able to help him out a little bit more. I don't want to take out Groove, because I felt like he had a decent game overall. But yeah, I think I'm not really that concerned about the triangle of sadness, even though it is quite a funny term, which come from our group chat.
Yeah, it's only called that because of when we're against teams who can sit in a solid low block, really, isn't it? And they stop us from giving any options anywhere, and it is just we're waiting for that option to arrive and we're passing it between those three, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say exactly the same point. It's only this year against, you know, Blackburn and Sunderland when they're just sat waiting for us.
Yeah, and something which, regarding the Byram being really high and wide, what I noticed was Nonto kind of played in where you'd expect an inverted fullback. He was coming deep there, and obviously Rodon never found him. And I think if you have someone who is a bit better on the ball, that pass to Nyonto is on in that position quite a few times from the centre-back role, and that probably opens us up in a different way attacking from that position with Nyonto there.
I have to say I like Nonto doing that of all of our wingers the most, because I think he's probably the best interior player of our wingers, isn't he, at doing that? I'd rather him do that than some of
them. Gray was really pushed far forward in those build-ups, and you know, he could have just been where Nyonto was and that would have been fine, but obviously we've made this slight change to have Gray play a little bit further forward when he's playing in the midfield and have Nyonto come in there. And so I do wonder if we upgrade on Rodon from a ball playing perspective next season, whatever division we're in, whether we see that come to fruition of having Nyonto drop in to that role and start driving from that area. But anyway, enough about that. We had another question from Twitter, this time from Fitzroy Baggers. That's a fantastic name. They've asked, was it deliberate to concede possession to them in the second half and stop pressing? I'll come to you, Martin, again.
Yeah, I do absolutely think that this was the game plan. It's something I tweeted quite quickly following the game, that I felt we managed the second half really well. We felt, obviously, I think at halftime, Will said that we're leaving too much space behind. The forward press isn't working, so we just need to change things up a bit and make things more solid, do what teams have been doing to us recently and causing us problems. So I think that's exactly what didn't believe it was confirmed post-match by Bamford and by Firpo that was the plan in the second half. So we can say with clarity that that was indeed the plan, and I felt it worked really well. They only created the one, or possibly two. I think there's one other chance in which I think it was O'Brien who put it wide. That was a pretty decent chance, just around about the time when we was making subs. I noticed that one. That one could have easily been a goal, and that would have opened things up even earlier. But I think largely, especially in the opening 15 to 20 minutes, we did a good job of handling what Middlesbrough were throwing at us. It maybe had been pushed on us more than what we would have hoped. We would have maybe hoped to have got out a bit more than what we did, because Borough were doing a really good job of pins in. And when we were trying to get the ball out, there was getting players marked when we were trying to get it, and we weren't able to keep hold of the ball. So that they also did a good job in keeping hold of the ball in those times and not letting us break. But eventually, we were able to break, and that was the plan, to attack quickly. And what's funny is, even though the plan was to hit in transition, the goal in second half didn't even come from transition. It was from some nice settled play, and the fantastic goal all around was our final goal. Really enjoyed it. Everyone who played their part in it was great, but I want to give special mention to one person, and that was Ethan Ampadu. The ball which he played central to Groove before he turned it forward to Bamford was super. Really, really, really good sort of thing that we want our centre backs to do when we are being pressed like we were at the time, because he was going like down the wing towards the touchline, and he looked towards Melier and noticed that Melier wasn't free because he had a player who was a player who was quite close. So instead, he diagonal into the centre to Groove, and it was just a really, really nice ball which opened it up totally, which gave us so much space to play into then. But largely, yeah, I don't think it was definitely the decision to let them have the ball, I think, despite or making it difficult for us to get out.
Yeah, I don't think there's any disagreements there, is there, Dan?
No, not at all. One thing I will say is I don't think it really dampened our attacking effectiveness. I mean, I know the XG dropped quite a bit second half, but I think we made some pretty good situations where we just didn't quite get a shot away. Like, obviously, the Dan James and Nonto ones in particular were a bit annoying. Like, come on, lads, get a shot away. It was really annoying. Like, Bamford got through and it was just offside. You know, it was half a yard offside. So I just felt we still created some really nice moments in that second half, and it was just, you know, just a slight bit off getting a couple more shots away and perhaps another goal away there. So I still felt we had a really good threat. It was obviously deliberate. I mean, Bamford confirmed it in the interview after the game, and I thought it was pretty effective. It felt more akin to the Leeds before the international break, where we just felt like, you know, we could sit in and absorb and then you know, attack with purpose when the opportunity arose. It just felt very much like that spell before the international break. So I'm kind of hoping, fingers crossed, that's what we get to enjoy the next two games, because I think that'll be an effective way forward for us.
Yeah, I think like the first half of the second half, it was when we had the ball, we were good with it, and it was, you know, we were letting Middlesbrough have the ball where we wanted Middlesbrough to have the ball. And then in that second half of the second half, it kind of switched to, if you remember, Farke said it at the end of the whole game that, you know, because that was a game where we sat deep and we tried to let them have the ball. And I think he said something like, we wanted them to have the ball. Well, when they had the ball, we wanted to just let them have it, but we wanted them to have it on our terms. And I felt like that's what we did in the first half of the second half. And then when they started, as you say, Martin, to trap us and stop us from getting the balls out where we wanted to get them, that's when it started to get a little bit ropey. And obviously, the last 20 minutes weren't exactly terribly ropey for us, but it wasn't as comfortable as that first half of the second half, I felt. But it was obviously, as you said, deliberate to try and let them just have the ball but not cause us any issues, like what we've seen against Norwich when we beat them at home. It was 100, as we've all said, it was definitely deliberate that's what it was, I think, from us as a change at half-time. And on that, if we hadn't changed at half-time, do we think we would have still won this match, Dan?
Probably, because I think our, you know, weaponry in those kind of transitional moments is better than theirs. So, despite them being very dangerous, but I do think it was a better approach to change, and I think it made the chances of winning the game more likely. I still think we probably would have just done it anyway. I think the way it was going, we were still the stronger team in the first half, weren't we? Even though it was a bit crazy.
And Martin, would you say that we would have still won this game?
I'm not sure. It's a tough one because obviously the first half it went two separate ways, and both teams had really good opportunities, and it could have easily ended a different way. But I do think we probably will still have won if we would have continued with the same half. It will have been a lot more chaotic and a lot more heart-wrenching, and we wouldn't have had the 9-12 towards the start of the first part of the second half where it was more comfortable for us when we were defending. But I think maybe it probably would have ended up similar results. Potentially, Murrow would have nicked a draw. There would have been more space for them to attack into. But I do think that largely this game was for us to win. I think we had the momentum on the day to get it done. I think speak vibes about
it. Yeah, I think it might have ended something like 6-4 to us. Like, genuinely, have just been the exact same as the first half and would have been, like, just awful to watch. Whereas the second half wasn't out. I was quite calm, even when we went 4-3 down. Anyway, on that, I think it's time for an ad break. So, before the ad break, I will plug the Patreon before Stockport's biggest ultra comes knocking on my door. That's Tom Alderson, for anyone who doesn't know. But don't worry, patrons, you do not have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. And if you want to find out more about our Patreon, then please visit patreon.com/ASAW. Patreon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now let's move on to the second half of the analysis, where we will focus a little bit more on some individuals. And one of the big individuals that came through, we had a number of questions about this player, was Ilyan Melier. More or less asking this one, I saw it on the running order and I sat back in shock of, should we drop Melier? How did we rate Melier in this game? Both when he had the ball and both at regular goalkeeping duties. I'll come to you, Dan, because you have verbally just gone no to me. Audibly no.
Melier is quite good in the Championship. Carl Darlow has proved not to be very good in the Championship this year. There's your answer.
We've got a Dutch under 18, Danny van den Heuvel. Why can't we just play him?
Well, because he's an under 18 who's not been tested. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, there's debate to be had about Melier's part in some of the goals that we conceded yesterday. Fair enough. I'm not completely and utterly in love with Melier as a keeper. Let's not go too far. But we've got two games to go. He's been part of the best defence in the league this year, and he's been a solid part of that best defence in the league this year, as in this calendar year. Why change? And he's good on the ball. He gets the kind of the build-up play that we, he's good with the build-up play. He's happy to receive the ball and hold it and orchestrate from the back. It's like a really key, important part of our game. So absolutely not. We're staying with Melier. It's a question for the summer, fair enough. But right now, it's just nuts even discussing it.
Martin, are you playing Christopher Clarkson, who's, I don't know, is he even in the squad at the moment? Hasn't he got like a driving ban or something over in Norway?
Yeah.
But, are you?
Yeah. Bring Clarkson in. Clarkson is so dreadful. So, but he'll still even be better than Melier. But yeah, I don't want Melier to be dropped. I think he did have some part in some of the goals in this game, but overall, he has been good this season, especially the second half of the season. He's come on leaps and bounds since the first part of the season, I think. But at the moment, he's had one poor game in amongst a lot of steady games, in my opinion. I tweeted as much following the game that he has one game where potentially he's at fault for one of the goals, and all of a sudden he's the worst goalkeeper in the world again. So yeah, I'm not up on that at all. Although I can see the people's reasons for wanting to replace him when we go to the Premier League. For the Championship, he's absolutely fine. But yeah, we'll see what things happen with him if we do get any offers for him, and if we can improve on him. That's the big question.
Yeah, I think for me, the first goal, I'm kind of like, it's a bit of freakish, you know. It's a coming together. You've got Rodon diving in as well. Melier is there. Probably Rodon shouldn't dive in, and maybe Melier does a better job with it before it becomes loose for Isaiah Jones. The third goal, I've heard some murmurings of that he should do better with that one. But I think you've just got to credit Latte Lap for being able to take that header so quickly and thinking very quickly instead of, I think you're expecting him to try and take a touch and then take a shot or take the keeper on in a 1v1 situation. And, you know, everyone praises Van Persie's header from the World Cup in 2010. That diving one for Holland against Spain in like the 5-1 victory or whatever it was. It's essentially very similar sort of circumstances of it's just a very good header. And then the second one, the reason why I've left the second goal is because I do think that he could do better. And I don't think it's down to shot-stopping ability. I think it's just that he's gone across goal a bit too much due to the way that Latte Lat has moved across, the way that Ampadu's defended it. And then he's basically left himself not visible of the ball when the shot's taken. And so he probably sees it a little bit too late. But we also, again, Dan, we were saying before we started recording that you've got to credit Latte Lat for noticing that in that split moment of when he's gone across and shooting back across goal. Yes, it goes through the goal in the middle, but he's taken the shot in a certain way of going across the right, very lateral. He's not coming diagonally, he's very, very lateral. And that makes that shot to the left very difficult to read and difficult to execute. And I think he executes it very well, basically.
Yes, it's a super finish from Latte Laf. Yeah, really, like, credit to him. And like you say, it goes through two players. Ampadu and Byram, I think, off the top of my head. So yeah, he probably sees it very late and he does get a hand to it. I'm prepared to admit or maybe accept that perhaps if he gets a hand to it, he should get a stronger hand to it and maybe push it round. That's the question mark in my mind. And I'm not a goalkeeping expert. But yeah, my big concern was, yeah, could he have got a stronger hand to it and could he have pushed it away?
Yeah, potentially. Right.
But I'm more interested in giving Latte Laf credit for a real good piece of play and really good finish, really sharp finish.
I think that's something a lot of Leeds fans or a lot of fans struggle to do is give the opposition praise for just doing something good. And, you know, I think that's just what we all are as fans, you know. I think you'll see it from anyone. You know, Leicester will play a game and West Brom will do really well, but it'll all be Leicester's fault, that sort of thing. But on the other questions, on the ball, like we said, he was absolutely fine. He had that one shaky moment. That happens, you know. And then, he didn't really have much else to do. There was some talks of him flapping, but you know that that's just how he goes to palm the ball away.
Yeah, I watched on the watch back, I was conscious of that because it's not something that upset me in the game and watching back. And yeah, he did kind of pour out, but he poured out pretty well and poured it into sort of safe spaces. And our fullbacks or whatever were able to get on the ball and play up the line.
Aesthetically, it doesn't look good, but it's his style. It was just how it is.
I was fine. I think he did.
Yeah, he gets the job done with those clearances, I feel. And I think he has got better at them. But ultimately, the majority of our fans just will not get on with this type of goalkeeper who does punch balls because it's not the way things have been done historically. And I'm speaking to the dark crowd here, the ones who do panic when a keeper has the ball at his feet and plays about to him. It's the modern way the game is played now. Just get used to it, Grandpa. Get used to it.
It's incredible, right? It's been since, what, Rob Green, since we had a goalkeeper like that, and that was 2016-17 season?
Uh-huh. Yep.
It's been 7 years that we've had this style of goalkeeping, really, at the club. Apart from that brief four games or whatever that we had Andy Lonergan when it was Paul Heckingbottom. It's just been this. But, Martin, I'm going to move on from Melier, and we're going to talk about your man, your lovely French anime loving man. He's also my French lovely anime loving man. But anyway, Ruter has hotly been discussed across Twitter and on our Discord. And yeah, Martin, I'm just going to ask you straight up, what did you make of his performance overall?
I think he had his best performance for a long time in this game. He had a couple of moments where he did lose the ball, and he also did lose the ball when they scored for them. That's the second game that he lost the ball for, wasn't it? Yeah. So he did lose the ball, but I'm going to defend this to the grave that I don't think he was trying to take anyone on in that. I've watched it back about 10 or 20 times, somewhere around in between those figures, and he doesn't get enough chance to decide what he's going to do with it. The O'Brien snaps into him really quickly behind. He takes one touch, and then the ball's won off him. I don't think there's any decision made there. Yeah, if he would have had it for about another second longer, he probably was going to try to turn him. I don't think at that point he had made that decision and tried to. I feel that was just good pressing action by Bayern. Yeah, that maybe he could have done better controlling the ball and got it down quicker, so stop him from nipping and getting the ball. But I don't think he was trying to go back by him in that moment. But people will disagree with that, and that's fine. But overall, lots of good moments were created in this game by Georgie. He could easily have had two assists in a different game. He had the one where Bamford was half a yard offside, which was just a phenomenal ball, really.
It's a lovely piece of play. The turn as well.
That created moments in me. It was just superb. The way he hit it, it was perfectly placed, and Bamford just had to run onto it. It was just such a shame that he was just slightly offside in that, but I guess we did have one goal which was definitely offside in this game, so we can't complain too much. We can't have two offside goals. No, that'd be too much. Overall, Georgia had a great game, and I will bend him to my dying breath, but I can understand why people do not like when he loses possession, because he does do it a fair amount. But that's the thing. He's a high-risk, entertaining player who only has fun in his mind. He's a young player as well, so people forget that so often because of how many games he's played for us now. But he's still quite young in his career. So he will pick and choose his moments more. But at the moment, I'm just enjoying him for what he is, which is just an incredibly fun player. And he's just always playing with a smile on his face. He loves the fans. Like you saw after the game, just how much love he has for them. He loves it so much here. And it winds me up when people don't enjoy him as much as I do. And I know there is plenty who do enjoy him as much as I do, and the fans do love him as well at the ground especially. He gets a lot of love by the fans in the ground because he is so enamoured with them and goes to them all the time. But in this game, I felt overall he was a net positive rather than a negative or needing to be taken off. I felt like it was right to take him off when he was taken off. That was more because we need a different player in the moment than Georgie, and we didn't need potentially losing the ball in deeper areas, and we needed to keep things more stable. So I can understand why he was brought off when he was. But overall, as I said before, he was net positive in this game, I felt, despite that one action where he did cost us a goal.
Dan, do you agree that the overall performance was good?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, definitely. It felt like the old Georgie was back, the way he was turning and creating opportunities and chances. It was the kind of like textbook Georgina Rutter performance, wasn't it? Really, like some absolutely wonderful, beautiful moments and some slightly infuriating moments when you just want him to lay it off simply. But that's just the player, and that's what you get with him. And he's a net positive way more often than he's a net negative, and he was yesterday. I mean, the only thing I can think of with the second goal, you know, could he have just simply chested it and laid it back to Byron very simply, and you know, to hoof it down the line? But that's not the team's style. That's not his style. He could have done that, but I just don't think you ever expect a player like him to do that, and he wouldn't. Maybe it's something he'll learn or as he gets older, but I think if you start kind of telling him to play things simple, then you take away those moments like the Bamford chance. So, and you know, and football's a big part of football is about like fun and enjoyment and seeing skillful players try difficult things and occasionally pull them off. And he's the kind of player that will do that, so yeah, I'm all on board the Georgie love train.
Yeah, obviously I'm on board the Georgie love train, and I agree with everything that both of you said regarding the fact that definitely his best performance since the international break, since he had surgery. I do think the 9 days rest there has 100% helped him most out of the majority of the players that we've got. I do, however, disagree with you, Martin, on the on where he lost the ball. And the reason why I say that is because I think Georgie will try and turn someone who's tight on him every single time. And when it comes off, that's when we get like that assist for Bamford that wasn't an assist because he was offside. You know, that when he makes those turns, it looks fantastic, and it's great for us because we know that once he's made that turn and he's come out the other side with the ball like within touching distance of his foot, he's going to somehow come away with the ball and turn. So I think he's tried to turn him and then not expected the player behind to be so close. That's where we've discussed like Burra's snap has been really good. You know, they put the pressure on. They've had a second line of pressure to anticipate that Rutter turn, which could be something like, you know, I'd imagine if we look back, we might see that from a throw in around that area, we throw it to Rutter, he turns a defender and goes. And that's probably something we've done loads. And so it wouldn't be surprising if that's something that like an analyst has picked up on to say, all right, he's going to try to do this, snap into him on the second one, and we'll be able to attack quickly.
And he does tend to turn with his left foot over his right shoulder, doesn't he? So if his back's to goal, he'll turn to his right. if that makes sense, and then drive left once he's turned. So I guess, you know, a defender who's, or a midfielder, whoever's done his homework, will know, position yourself slightly to his right, or to your right, sorry, and block the angle where he's turning to. So I think O'Brien did that well, to be fair. Again, sometimes give a bit of credit to the opposition.
100%.
Before we move on from Georgie, I just want to quickly mention how good...
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah.
How good he was.
Yeah, definitely move on.
How good he was out of possession. Yeah. I felt like he had a really strong game out of possession, and he won the ball a few times and got us forward in occasions. And yeah, I just felt that was one part that had to be mentioned, because it wasn't one of his best games out of possession, I felt, as well as his best recent performance in possession.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that as well. It was noticeable that... it didn't seem like we were missing any presence in midfield when Greer was a bit further forward in the press and Rutter dropped. He did a really good job, was how I felt. But we will move on, because we have spoken about him for quite a while now. And we'll move on to the fact that what's been a common theme throughout the season as well is Leeds fans complaining about Daniel Farke's sub choices and the timings of them and all that comes with it. How do you feel he did in this game? How do you feel they went in this game, Dan?
I thought they were fine. I mean... there were no real big problems to fix with the subs, were they? We weren't like struggling to create. We weren't kind of, we didn't have players that were limping around too much. So I just thought they gave us a little bit of a boost and a bit of an energy boost at the right time. So for once, I was completely fine with them. I mean, they were quite late in the game, but that was okay. We were dominating the game and there was no issue to fix. So for once, Dan did okay.
Mine.
And I think I was happy with the choices he made, by the way, as well. I think he made the right swaps.
Mine, do you think he made the right swaps?
Yeah, I do. I think the sub choices he made were the right ones and at the right time. There's maybe the argument that he could have brought on Joseph rather than Perreault, but I don't think that Perreault had a bad game. He did the job of, he was quite secure on the ball. Whenever he got the ball, he didn't really turn it over when he did have done that in some games, but in this one, he was quite solid in that respect. And yeah, just towards the end of the game, there were a few moments where we were keeping a good spell of possession and stopping them from breaking forward to try to score at the same time, and he did a good job in contributing to that, to helping the ball stick a bit further up the field. But I think the best sub out of the lot that he made was Camara, and the position which Camara was taking up, he was playing pretty much the same role which Georgie was playing. He was the most advanced of the midfielders. He was definitely playing at the 10 for me. And I think he made that decision so we would have more energy in the forward areas. I know the press wasn't as high as what it was in the first half, but there were moments towards the end where we were pressing quite high, which I didn't recall seeing live, but things were a bit tense live, so it's natural that I didn't really notice that. But there were a few moments where we were pressing relatively high towards the end, some good counter-pressing moments which stopped Borough from getting forward. And he was part of those. So I felt that sub especially was really good. But yeah, I probably would have liked to see a little bit more of Joseph. But I guess at that point in the game, we didn't really need to get more goals. And that's what you bring Joseph on for. So overall, I'm probably okay with all subs that he made. And it was a good performance from Danny Boy in this one.
Yeah, I think for me at 4-2, bringing on Perreault made a bit more sense, because that was at like 72 minutes, I think, when he made that change. Whereas if it was 4-3 at 72 minutes, I think I would have liked to have seen Joseph, just because of the way it started to go after there was when we stopped having that outlet when they did press. Perreault did well when it came to him in feet, but he's not that outlet that we want from a long ball, really. I just felt like that maybe could have been something different, but that's also playing into where the game ended up going after Perreault came on. But moving on, we've discussed a bit in midfield, and we discussed him in the previous pod and how he managed in midfield alongside Gruev. But how did we feel that Gray did in this game, now having spent a little bit more time with Ilya alongside him? Mine.
So yeah, I think this was a bit different to the previous game, which played together, in that Gray was, I think, asked to play more advanced than what he was in the previous game. In the previous game, where he was alongside Gruev, he was really operating more as a pivot rather than what was essentially, he was essentially acting in his best role as a box-to-box midfielder, quite advanced as well. And he was, I feel it had to be an instruction with the amount of off-ball runs that he was making, getting forward. And that part of it really worked for him. And I think it's his more natural way of playing as a midfielder. And it's kind of the role which he has for the England youth setup, that he's that more advanced box-to-box player rather than being sitting pivot player. And while at times we probably could use his presence in deeper areas, overall he was a very good input to this game, and he helped us get forward. He was a big part of Nanto's goal, that driving run that he did forwards, and even just keeping hold of the ball in one moment of that was really good. He did so well in that goal. Yeah, the pass to Somerville wasn't the best at the end of it, but that's okay, in my opinion. Those sort of things will come with more time and more maturity when to get that passage right. I've seen a fair bit of pushback on Gray and his passing ability on the Tactico Twitter. So I just wanted to say that I don't have any problem with his passing ability. And yeah, sometimes he will get it wrong, but come on, he's 18 years old playing in the Championship. He's going to make mistakes. But overall, this game was probably, I'd probably say, one of his best performances in midfield of the season. I still think his better performances have come at right back, but most of the better performances have been from off the ball perspective, and winning a lot of last-ditch challenges, doing well against his wide marker. So I think this was the best one that we've seen from him in the midfield area, and I think they could have a really good partnership going forward. Could Groove and him, because Groove is naturally the one who will be happy to sit back and hold position in deeper areas, and Gray is more naturally better at getting forward. So yeah, I felt it worked really well.
Yeah, Dan, do you have anything to add on young Archie?
Yeah, really, really good performance. Really liked his game here. It kind of he kind of played it like he was the like a pair of three eights, one of the three eights in a midfield three almost, didn't he? He kind of got really high up, almost as high as Ritter in some cases. So it kind of almost looked like a 4-3-3 at times, didn't it, in that midfield? You know, with a couple of quite advanced eights, and sometimes a winger was dropping in deeper than him to pick the ball up, and he would run beyond the winger. So I liked all that, and I think he was really good at turning out pressure and, like say, getting us upfield. He's quite press resistant, isn't he? He can receive the ball. He's obviously a really strong boy. He's got really good anticipation about where to knock the ball away from the onrushing defender. So yeah, just a really nice game, and I think that's the blueprint for how to use Archie going forward. You know, I think use him as that kind of box-to-box player, give him that license to get forward, because you know you can trust him to get back and, you know, work hard and defend as well. So yeah, really good game.
Yeah, 100% agree with everything you said. There's nothing much more to say on his performance. But is there anything else? Is there anyone who we've missed? Who do we feel excelled? Who do we feel didn't? Dan, is there anyone who we've not really discussed?
Yeah, I mean, there's been tons of praise for Firpo, and I think Martin's probably going to talk about that. But I thought Bamford had quite a good game doing the kind of target man stuff. Like, held the line, like, linked play quite well. I mean, he's lost a yard of pace. There's a couple of occasions where he didn't quite get to the ball that I thought he should have got to, things like that. But just generally took his goal well, like, linked play, gave their centre-backs a hard game, and just impressed. Okay, did his job as a presser. So, yeah, I just think give him a bit of credit, having that kind of little break over the last few days perhaps has done him the world of good. And I hadn't realised this actually until I saw some stats, but this year is basically goal over every game, isn't he? I think this season.
Every other start.
In 2024. Every other start.
Well,
yeah.
Every other game in 2024, but yeah, basically that's the only time he's started. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just he's actually got a pretty good goal return, like 10, you know, 9 goals and an assist, I think, or something like that. Anyway, in you know, whatever, 18 games or something. So yeah, just 18 starts. So all power to him, you know. If that's the level he can provide again now, then I'm more than happy to see him start in the last two games. I've actually, you know, I've been an advocate for Joseph getting some more minutes, but I'm no problem with Bamford continuing to start if that's his level from now on.
Yeah, Martin. So are you going to talk to us about Junior?
Yeah, the Junior had a fantastic game. I mean, he's been good for quite a long time now, and he's been excellent combining with Somerville down that left flank. And his timing of when he makes his overlapping run has just been superb. And his crossing has been the best we've ever seen him at the club. We've really seen this side of Junior Firpo, and it's also the time when we've had Junior Firpo available to the longest thing. We have a coincidence, that really, isn't it? You give a player to have a player who's available. He's going to naturally get better the more he plays in the role. Yeah, something to think about there. But yeah, he was fantastic. He was as fantastic as what his touch is. And that's saying something, because it's a fantastic touch.
And considering that apparently he was ill in that game, which
Yeah.
You know, having heard how ill he was, apparently, to then have seen the picture that he shared of him celebrating with the fans, I was just like, you were apparently throwing up at half-time there, Junior. There's could be some ill fans going into this weekend in QPR. But yeah, I agree. Like, Bamford led the line really well, and Firpo, again, has just been really consistent level, and then he was a bit above that consistent level, I felt, last night.
Firpo was one of the guys, but obviously the main guy in this game was Somerville. He's just our man now. When we need someone to pull a clutch moment out and score a goal, he's that guy. He's just really putting a stamp down on the championship and really showing people who are saying, how has Somerville won the player of the year over Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, etc., etc. I mean, he's just that guy. When you need a goal, he will provide it. When you need an assist, he'll provide it. He's just everything to his game, and he's playing with such confidence at the moment. And he's so hard to stop when he cuts in onto his right and whips that ball into the far corner. I mean, you'd think a goal's going to come nearly every time he does it. That's how reliable it's been. And yeah, just so lucky to have him in this division. He's got absolutely no right to be playing in this division. He's so much better than the Championship. And I do hope we keep hold of him. But if we don't, I think he can go for a lot of money for us. And yeah, I don't want him to go, of course, not advocating that at all. I want to keep hold of our best players. But there obviously will be one big sale coming before long. And yeah, he's destined for the top of the game, in my opinion. And I'm saying this because he's performing well in the Championship, but we know he's done it in the Premier League as well. He's done it against Liverpool at Anfield. So we know he can play at the top end of the game. So yeah, he's such a fantastic player, and I just want to give him his props. I've already spoken about Routier and his game in the field, so I won't dwell on him any longer. But yeah, Somerville was just so superb in this game.
I mean, him and Nonto were just a bit too much for Borough to handle, weren't they? The pair of them, really. They're both good. They're just a level up, aren't they, really, those two? With Somerville, I think, like, he's got the like respect of the division now, hasn't he? The amount of times he's receiving the ball and the defender would back off and just, you know, watch him, like, and take a defensive position rather than go and challenge him, because I just think, like, defenders are kind of scared stiff that he's going to skin them straight away, so I just feel like his level's up there, isn't he?
They're worried to show him down the left because he'll win a penalty. And because he doesn't often get the ball across, right, when he goes down the left. That's not where his assists come from, but he will usually win a foul. But then if they don't show him down there and they show him on the inside, he's got that incredible finish. He just seems, like you said, he's a confident player right now, and he's incredibly composed. There's absolutely no doubt about that. That's the one thing which there were some murmurs of, you know, some players maybe feeling the pressure a little due to the stage of the season, how close it is. I think with Somerville, we've 100% not seen that. And I think Nonto coming back as well, we're not seeing that with him either. He's sort of like playing really well now that he's come back into the starting lineup, having been injured post-international break. Like you said, he had a good game. His game were a little bit different to what I've seen. I've not watched the last few games, so maybe he has been dropping into that as well. But yeah, I thought everyone who we've just highlighted there, those four players were great, and that's all we need. You only need 4 out of 11 players to perform probably in this league if you've got the quality that we've got.
True. I liked how Nonto and Somerville swapped yesterday, and how Nonto came in and dropped in and did the kind of inverting thing that we've got Somerville doing a lot of this season. I'm less keen on Somerville doing it. I think I'd rather see Nonto do it more than Somerville more often. I think he's better suited to playing inside than Somerville, and I think you want Somerville higher up. So yeah, that was nice wrinkle yesterday, and I hope that carries on.
And finally, we're just going to have to, I'm going to have to take a temperature check of you both on how we feel going into the two games. Are we going up automatically? Are we going up as champions? Are we dying in the playoffs like we always do every year, even though me and Darren both want a championship playoff final win? Because it has to happen in our lifetime sometime, right? Martin, where are you at?
I'm a little bit more confident than I was after the previous game, but I'm still not convinced that we've definitely got automatics in the bag, mainly because of how much of a persistent bunch of buggers that Ipswich have been. That's the main thing which has got me antsy. But at the same time, Ipswich do have two very tough games coming up. So I do think that they will drop points in at least one of those. Hopefully one of those drop points will be a loss, because that would work really well for us. But there's a lot of pressure on them. And if we do win at QPR on Friday, then that's going to be even more pressure added on to Ipswich for the final few games. And if they do well under that pressure and get the wins, then they deserve it. You can't say any more than that. No matter how mental this division has been, more than two teams can't deserve to go up automatically, and one team who deserves to get in the automatics will to go through the playoffs. And if that ends up being us, let's hope we do it this time. But yeah, there's still a lot of football, two games left to play, but that seems like so much, and so many permutations can happen in that time. So yeah, it's so hard to predict anything with it, so I'm just going to try my best to enjoy the ride as it goes.
And Dan, where are you?
I'm quite relaxed. I feel so much more confident after yesterday. I mean, obviously, it was a bit chaotic and scruffy at moments, but if we can just get those tidy little moments up, that kind of second half performance in particular, that kind of application and approach will probably see us through against QPR and perhaps Southampton at home, who hopefully by that point will have nothing to play for. So I'm quietly confident because I just don't see Ipswich winning all their games. I can see them drawing a game, which is basically enough for us as long as we win ours. So yeah, I feel like it's more likely we're going to win our two games than Ipswich will win all three of theirs remaining games.
Yeah, I think
looking
at Ipswich's final game, you've just got to pray that Huddersfield are still in with a chance of staying up at that point. So after this weekend, if they are, then you know that game could be Ipswich fighting to go up and Huddersfield fighting to stay up. As we speak, it's 2-0 to Leicester against Southampton.
Yeah, I've just seen that.
Yeah, I've literally just looked right now as well. So that will basically put Southampton out of the race, and essentially I'd say probably make it us or Ipswich for that second spot, and you're probably giving Leicester the title at that point. So yeah, slightly worried now that that's the situation where it's looking at, even though I had been calling for a Leicester win so that Southampton have nothing to play for, and it makes that last game a bit easier, because I do think I saw that Southampton were resting players today in prep for the playoffs because they kind of consigned themselves to it. So hopefully they might do similar. But I think really you want to be going into the playoffs with as much momentum as you can get.
And also, I don't think you can really say that any team will go easy on Leeds. I mean, just look at Borough in this game. Set the keeper up,
yeah, for Christ's sake, at a corner.
They've got nothing.
For a game that meant nothing.
Nothing to play for. They can't get the playoffs now. And they're throwing the goalkeeper up like they need a point to save themselves from relegation. That's how desperate they were to get the victory over us. And I know it's been bandied around so much that we're everyone's cup final, but it's hard to be denied that teams do really want to get a win over us. And I think Southampton will be in the same boat. I think they'll really want to get a win over us. So I don't expect that final game to be easy. As much as we all want it to be, it's not going to be. They're going to want to do double over us this year. They've beaten us once. They're going to want to do it again. And they're going to want to get that win at Elland Road. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. I'm not expecting anything less from them. So I'm just hoping that we don't go into the final game with it all resting on that final game, because I think I may just die. I'll just be dead. No pods for me after that. I won't be doing the playoffs if we enter in, because I'll be dead. So
I will say, and this is something we've all said in the group chat, and I'm in the same school as you, Hostie, but like, I don't fear the playoffs, and I think we've got to go up at some point in the playoffs. I think our team setup and our style of play perhaps suits that kind of competition. So, you know, more so than the Bielsa team, I'll be a little bit more confident with this crew. You know, in a couple of chaotic semi-finals, and you know, and a mad game at Wembley where the game opens up, perhaps when everyone's on a hot day. I don't know. I feel like it's something we could do well in. So I'm not totally. I wouldn't be crestfallen if we ended up in the playoffs. Totally, I think it could be a good fun tournament. And imagine going up at Wembley; that'd be class. So
yeah, I'd love to just see Leeds win at Wembley. Last year, I saw my two other teams win at Wembley, so it's time for me to see Leeds win at Wembley. But yeah, without further ado, I'm just going to remind everyone of the Patreon, where you can get more of us and bonus pods and articles. Just remind me, Martin, what that is.
It's patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
And that is all for tonight. We'll be back very soon to preview QPR. But for now, I'll say thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Hossie.
I'll say thank you to Dan.
Cheers, Tom.
And I'll say thank you, dear listeners. Have a great week. We'll probably be back Thursday morning with the preview for QPR. And au revoir.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.